The following is a paid program. The views and opinions expressed by today's guests do not necessarily reflect the views of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee, the Urban League of Greater Chattanooga, or any of its employees and the Brewer Media Group.
Hello, this is Donna L., and I have the honor and the privilege to join two of the gurus of diversity and inclusion, actually, in Chattanooga. I have Mr. Ron Harris and Mr. Warren E. Logan, and they have an amazing new show called The Power of We. Hello, guys. How are you all?
Hey, good morning. Donna. How are you, Donna?
Good to see you.
I am so happy to see you guys. So I'm Donna L., of course, and I am so excited because you guys are joining us by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee in partnership with the Urban League of Chattanooga called Perspectives on the Power of We. I have Mr. Ron Harris, and I'm going to introduce him. He's the Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. He has served in various management roles at Blue Cross for more than 30 years. And during that time, he co-founded the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association Diversity Alliance, which shares best practices and addresses diversity awareness across the country. Also, Mr. Warren E. Logan Jr., he's the president and chief executive officer of the Urban League of Greater Chattanooga. He has been the Urban League of Greater Chattanooga for 25 years. He's been there. He has also served as the president of the Association of Executives for the National Urban League and as a member of the National Urban League Board of Trustees. And I am so excited to talk to them. Everybody else in this community knows you, so I didn't really have to introduce you.
Well, you're too kind.
Well, you're very kind. We appreciate that. We just appreciate you getting us out of the Zoom room.
You know what? The Zoom room. Yeah. I will start using it. I think we're all thankful to be actually
absolutely
in person.
Absolutely.
And we are social distancing, by the way, if you're listening. And you guys have a new show. And I'm really excited about it. You are sharing all of your perspectives. And of course, I mentioned the name, The Power of We radio series. And we're going to kick it off. Obviously, 2020 has brought a lot of serious and lingering issues to light, especially related to systemic racism. And I want to get that right. And social injustice. How have you and your organizations responded to these events?
Well, thanks for that question, Donna. Blue Cross is a mature diversity and inclusion organization. We've intentionally supported diversity, inclusion, but more importantly, cultural competency for more than 20 years. But the events of 2020 brought some renewed urgency to our efforts around social justice. And we've taken we've developed a few initiatives and really worked hard to bring them to fruition. And some of our efforts have included Racism Must End, which was a very strong statement put out almost immediately by our CEO, Dr. J.D. Hickey. Additionally, we've had leadership outreach to our employees and where we held listening sessions because people were at a point where they were just numb, didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say. And so we created an environment where we could serve as an outlet for those. We're one of the companies that's also observing Juneteenth starting in 2021.
Yes, I heard that. That's amazing.
Yes, it's absolutely wonderful. We're hosting mandatory unconscious bias training for our entire workforce. And we've done that for a number of years on a voluntary basis, but now it's mandatory. We have our critical conversations, which was cascaded from that. Managers will learn to have these critical conversations with their staff, with their teams. And so we've done a lot of things along those lines. I think one of the greatest things we did, it gets me all pumped up and excited. We were already giving three $10,000 scholarships to minorities majoring in any field of health.
Right.
We doubled that to six. And so we have six scholars this year that we've awarded $10,000 to further their education. We're excited about it.
All right. You guys are always doing so much great stuff with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. You guys are community. And we know the Urban League is community as well. And I'm going to ask you the same question, Mr. Logan. Have you, your organization, responded to these events thus far?
Well, Don, I think that most of what we've ended up doing is having to react to these events more so than to plan for the future. And by reacting, what I'm talking about is basically dealing with what we call maybe the low-hanging fruit. And that is dealing with people who have lost their jobs as a result of this. We're very busy trying to train and get them additional jobs. We're working with minority-owned and women-owned businesses who could not basically complete the forms necessary to get, you know, the stimulus payments and things of that nature. We're also basically working with the kids at home during the summer. We have a summer school program as well as the distance learning program to try to help close that gap, particularly regarding math and reading and those other subject matters that they're having challenges with, and that is further exasperated because of the pandemic as such. They're having to work from home. In addition to that, of course, we're doing some of the normal things we would do. We had a number of people. We had to close down 15 tax sites, mm-hmm. you know, so we ended up with one. So we had a lot of people, particularly elderly people, still needing that service. So we collapsed all that into one. And so, and then, of course, with our back to school program, as such, we provided maybe 600 pairs of new shoes for kids. And we're participating right now in a number of task forces and convenings to address the COVID-19 and the economic inequity that is going on in the community. Now, one of the things I think that we recognize, and I'm going to stop, two things I want to say. One is that, before I forget, I want to congratulate Ron and Blue Cross, because Blue Cross is the number one company in the nation by Fortune 500 as far as its inclusion and diversity program.
Yes.
Now, that speaks volumes as
Definitely.
Such, and you know that's happened here in Chattanooga. So our hat and our applause is basically to Ron and to Blue Cross and the leadership of Blue Cross. But also what we have to understand is that COVID-19 pulled the cover back on some things that are already here. Mm-hmm. You know, it exposed the extent of racism in the community. It exposed the degree of social injustice that is going on. So what you had is that you had a number of people who would normally be at work, let's just say hundreds of thousands of millions, that are now sitting home watching television,
exactly.
and they could not believe what they were seeing.
Right.
So as a result of that, when it came to the marches and things of that nature, it looked entirely different from the 60s. You had people of all different colors and persuasions that were out there just saying, hey, this is wrong.
Right.
This can't be right. They just really couldn't believe it. So that's some of the things that we're doing as far as the low-hanging fruit is concerned. And then, of course, as far as dealing with the policy, we're dealing with that on a day-to-day basis.
All right. I know you guys are doing so much, and I do want to ask, in your opinion, what's the most effective way for our communities here in Chattanooga to advocate and to encourage positive change?
Well, there are a couple of things that I think is necessary. One of the reasons why the power of we, in particular, zeroing in on voting, we have really never gotten down to the core of the power of voting, you know, and it's like a bullet, you know, and if it's done right, you can change anything. I think one of the things, a couple of things we could be doing here in the community, number one, we have to make a decision as to whether or not we're going to embrace change. And the change basically will deal with inclusion as opposed to diversity, because, you know, all communities are diverse, for lack of a better word. So the leadership of the community has to decide, we are going to embrace this, and basically we're going to be number one citizen in the country to do it. And the way we're going to do it is that we're going to pull different people together, not the same people all the time, but different people with different ideas, different concepts, different strategies, can pull these ideas out and to decide, what do we want to look like, you know, let's just say in 5 years? What kind of community do we want to be? And whether or not we can make a conscious decision to work towards that effort. That's one of the things that I think needs to be done.
So you guys came up with this series. And, you know, I'm just going to ask you, why is it so important, Mr. Harris, to have a series like that? What does the power of we, where did it come from, and what does it mean?
Well, you know, Blue Cross has had a goal from the beginning, not just for diversity, but more importantly, for inclusion. And so we chose that pronoun because we recognize that we are better together. And it's not about an individual. Nothing speaks to inclusion better than we. And that we can be all of us. It could reside at Blue Cross, but it doesn't. It's
right.
cascaded throughout our community. It includes the Urban League. It includes our grassroots leadership, civic leadership, educational leadership. We're all in this together.
All right. I love that. And you guys decided to partner, and the power of we is something that's going to continue. What do you all hope to accomplish with the series?
Well, there are a couple of things. One of the things that we're hoping to accomplish, particularly regarding this particular aspect of the series, is to really increase the number of persons coming out to vote by at least maybe 20%, particularly people of color, going to the polls, basically knowing who they're going to vote for, why they're voting for these persons and things of that nature, and basically make the connection between now and, let's say, March of next year. That's when we elect the mayor. Now, it's very important regarding the leadership of the community, because the leadership of the community has to buy in on basically what the goals are going to be. Right. So if we get the wrong persons in office, baby, we're going to be back where we started from. So that's why it's so important. That's what we're hoping to accomplish, you know, to increase and educate the voters to the extent that we're able to institutionalize it.
And let me respond to that just very briefly, too, Warren. I think you said it absolutely correctly. But it's also to create a continued dialogue, and hopefully our companies, organizations, and the citizens of Chattanooga will get involved and move our city forward. If we love our city, and I know we do, we have to continue to make it a place where we can all have success and feel equal and contribute to making our city better.
All right. Do you guys think we're in a place for positive change in this community?
I think we are, because if we're not, we might as well just go home and get under the cover, you know, wait till the Lord come, you know. But I think we are, because I think everybody, well, not everybody, but most people recognize that change is needed on all fronts, per se, and that in order to change, there are going to be some sacrifices that are going to be necessary for all of us. But one of the things that I think that we have to understand and get in our minds, because I think we treat it a little differently, we treat change as if somebody has to give up something. And, you know, for example, if African-Americans are able to achieve a higher job status, a higher income, and so forth and so on, a lot of people take that to mean, that means, well, if I give that up, if I allow that to happen, then that means I can't achieve. But that's not true. There's plenty to go around. Right. You know, it's jobs and resources and things of that nature. So we have to make basically, we have to educate our community and come to this conscious decision that, yeah, we can change if necessary and we can do it. You know, if nothing else, you can see it from the standpoint of all the things that have been accomplished up to this point in the nation.
I think you're right. Too many of us have a scarcity mentality as opposed to an abundance mentality.
Absolutely.
And I think there are some things we can do. We can all vote. We all need to drive in our lane. We all need to send the elevator back down. All of us play a part in the solution, just like we all play a part mm-hmm. in the problem. You know, anything we permit, we promote.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anything we permit, we promote. And so each of us, from the grassroots level to the political and civic leadership, as I said before, we play a part. We play a part. And so I think we're at a pivotal time in our history, in our city, and I think we've got to become more comfortably uncomfortable and continue these types of dialogues.
What kind of topics are you guys going to cover each month?
Wow.
What topics are you going to cover each month?
Well, there's so many, but Ron, I'm going to let you lead off with that one.
Thank you, Warren. Again, I think one of the ones we have to talk about, we're going to talk about unconscious bias. We're going to talk about voting and the election. We're going to talk about dealing with racist language. We're going to talk about the difference between being non-racist and anti-racist. There is an ocean of difference between being non-racist and anti-racist, so we're looking forward to that discussion and dealing with racism and inequality in the workplace.
Also, I think that as a result of that, you know, these things, we're going to get down to maybe some practical things that we can all relate to. You know, can we address substandard housing? How do we address poverty? You know, livable wage jobs for people. You know, can we get the doors open where, you know, you're not faced with a no every time you go to a new door of employment and things of that nature? Can we basically discuss how healthcare affects us? Why were persons of color adversely impacted more than white persons regarding the COVID-19? Now, what's the result of that? Well, that inequity basically, all of this centers around economics, per se. And so we have really a double pandemic. COVID-19, as well as the system of injustice and racism, is a double whammy, for lack of a better word, and we're going to basically have to start treating it that way.
Yeah. All right. So asking you finally, when can listeners catch the new series?
I guess I respond to that one, Warren.
Yes.
All right. It will be the last weekend of the month through December. The last weekend of every month through December. And the show would be something exciting. We're looking forward to it.
All right. Well, we're excited about it, and we are excited we're housing it here at Brewer Media Group. We're really excited because I know you guys always have some really deep conversations with people in this community, and everybody gets a chance to get a little bit of this sauce, which I'm excited about.
Well, with you at the helm, I'm sure it's going to get deeper.
All right. Hey, I got some questions already.
Yeah, so I know you have.
I'm going to wait for my time to come in. But I want to say thank you guys for joining me, and I'm looking forward to the series. We'll be right back after the short break. And also, when we return, Ron and Warren will talk to Tennessee Secretary of State Trey Hargett about how voters can plan for the upcoming election, what to expect at the polls, and the best way to make your voice heard. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Donna.
All right.
Now back to Perspectives on the Power of We with your host, Ron Harris, and Warren E. Logan, Jr.
Welcome back to Perspectives on the Power of We. Once again, I'm Ron Harris, Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion at Blue Cross. Warren and I are very excited to welcome our next guest. We're honored to have Tennessee Secretary of State Trey Hargett with us. Secretary Hargett was elected by the Tennessee General Assembly as the state's 37th Secretary of State in 2009, and he was reelected in both 2013 and 2017. He's here to talk with us about the upcoming election, planning, what to expect at the polls, and how to make sure your vote is counted. Thanks for joining us, Secretary.
Ron, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you and Warren today.
This year has been a bit unusual, to say the least. What are the challenges of planning an election during a pandemic?
Well, Ron, you know, honestly, it's like we're running two different elections. You know, we're seeing a heavy increase in the number of absentee ballots that people are requesting. You know, Tennessee has 14 different reasons that people can use to request one. And in a typical election, only about 2% of the people vote absentee by mail. You know, we expect that number, you know, could get well up closer to 15 or 20% this time around. And so we're not only preparing for the typical in-person voting experience, we're also having to prepare for a tremendous by-mail experience as well. And that means having the necessary number of people to run the in-person experience that we always have, as well as really ramping up to make sure we have the necessary people to process absentee ballot requests, get those ballots out to people, and then be able on election day to start opening those envelopes and counting those ballots on election day.
What did you learn from the August elections that is helping you prepare for November?
Well, we learned how much planning matters, and so we had a good plan, and we had a lot of election officials around the state who executed that plan. And we also learned that we would rather be overprepared than underprepared. You know, and when people walked into the polls, and I made it a point to visit about 40 counties and going to visit the remainder of them during the upcoming early voting in October, is they told us that, well, gosh, I thought I'd come to a hospital or I thought I'd come to a surgery center. I mean, it looked that clean. I mean, the detail that was shown in wearing face shields and or mask and gloves, reducing touch points, the necessary cleaning of the facilities. You know, many people told us, hey, this is the cleanest place I've been in a long time. And so it's not just about being prepared. It's also how that portrays confidence for our voters as they come in to know that we're doing everything we can to make voting safe, clean, and secure in the state of Tennessee.
Good. What can voters expect when they head to the polls for the presidential election? For instance, how will this year's election look different? Will there be PPE or social distancing, et cetera?
Well, I really appreciate you asking that question because, you know, we can't make people wear masks when they come to the polls. You know, that would be, in my mind, kind of equivalent to a poll tax, and we certainly don't want to have that. But we are asking people to wear masks, and we have been so pleased during the August election that, well, over 90%, not 95% of people come in wearing a mask. Everybody's social distancing. We're making sure also that our poll officials who are working in many cases not only on election day for 12 hours but work in the early voting period, that they have the necessary PPE to protect themselves as well as the voters. So we've been working with the Department of Military. We work with outside vendors and work with all the county election officials to not only make sure we have the PPE, but it's properly used so that we can protect these poll officials and voters across the state of Tennessee.
What did you learn from the August elections that is helping you prepare for November?
Well, that's a great question as well, and not only during the pandemic, but, you know, several years ago, we rolled out our online voter registration system, and now we're over 1 million transactions where people have either changed their address or gone online to register to vote. And also, I've had a real passion during my 12 years of service is doing in-person voter registration drives. Now, the pandemic has changed our ability to do that some this year, but I guarantee you I have visited more college campuses and done more voter registration drives than any previous Secretary of State has. You know, I think it's important that we get people engaged, and the most fundamental way we do that is first getting people registered to vote. And then, honestly, when it comes to voter participation, in Tennessee, we have been a red state traditionally. And people often compare us, and they'll say, well, why aren't your voter turnout numbers like Georgia or Florida? You know, those are battleground states. And what we're facing here in Tennessee is that a lot of times people think their vote doesn't matter. Well, if you don't go vote, your vote surely won't matter. I happen to believe that we are better off if we take the opportunity to participate in our elections, because that's how we hold our form of government accountable. It's how we make our wishes heard. And so not only are we working to try and get people registered, we do a lot to create awareness around how easy it is to early vote in Tennessee, as well as how easy and robust it is to vote on Election Day. And during this election, we're also having to make sure that we put out the messages to help people understand what is required to get an absentee ballot and how we can help facilitate that by encouraging people to make that request early and then get that ballot back in so it can be counted properly.
How has your office made it easier to register to vote and to cast a ballot during the pandemic?
Well, as we discussed earlier, you know, online voter registration has been a tremendous boon for us to try and increase our voter registration numbers. And voter participation, honestly, you know, people don't go vote because the Secretary of State says to go vote. They go vote because, they have a candidate or idea that they strongly believe in, you know, either for the good or the bad. And they also, they go vote because they believe their vote matters. And we're putting a lot of messages out there to help people understand that their vote matters through our Your Vote Matters campaign. And we open 12 hours a day in most counties. You know, some counties make the decision to only, you know, be open for 10 hours. They can do that. And it's important that people understand we have one of the most robust early voting periods in the entire nation. And so we're putting those messages out there. It's frustrating for us as election officials sometimes that we feel like we go through all this preparation and we want people to go vote. We want 100% turnout. I believe that makes our society better as a whole when we all participate. I think one of the things we're seeing is that culturally, especially young people, they are just not as engaged. And they think the way to engage is by posting something on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and they feel like they've done their part. The bottom line is we have to continue as adults, and that's probably not the right term for it. We need to make sure as older Tennesseans, to make sure younger Tennesseans understand the sacrifices that were made so that they could have the opportunity to elect their leaders and participate in these elections, and that the only way to really make sure your voice is heard is to go to the polls and vote. I think one of the things a lot of people miss out on is that whenever you don't go vote, the person you really empower is the person who does go vote. And the only person who can truly vote your values is you yourself. You know, not the person sitting next to you, not your family member. You are the only person who can truly 100% of the time vote your own values. And so it's incumbent upon us to continue to hammer away and help people understand that when they don't go vote, all they're doing is turning the reins of power over to those that do.
What should voters do to plan ahead for the election? Should they cast their ballots early or wait until Election Day?
Well, you know, personally, I like early voting. I like the in-person voting experience. So I'm going to tackle this in about three different ways. Number one, be a prepared voter. Start doing your research now and know who your candidates are. And you can go to our GoVoteTN.com website or our app at GoVoteTN. And you'll be able to see a ballot that's unique to you and your address and also be able to get information about how to vote absentee by mail, where you can go vote early, or where you can go vote on Election Day. So it's a great resource. So be a prepared voter and know how you want to cast your vote. And that will save you time regardless if you're voting by mail, early voting in person, or voting on Election Day. And then make your plan about when you're going to go vote. You know, we're going to see probably by election, by the time Election Day rolls around, 60% of the voters will have already voted, either during early voting or absentee. But you need to know where your polling site is. You need to know how you're going to go vote. Make a plan for what time of day you're going to go vote. And if you do those things, those will well prepare you to make the experience a pleasant one. And also, if I could encourage people, if you're going to go vote on Election Day, you know, and like I said, most counties have polling places that are open 12 hours on Election Day. Typically, the slow times are mid-morning and mid-afternoon. You know, it's amazing to me that if you go at 7 a.m., you'll see a line of people, no matter where you are, who are waiting to be among the first to go vote because they want to go and get it out of the way. But if you have some flexibility to vote during the times that are less busy, like, say, 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon, then you tend, you know, what will be a short visit could become an even shorter visit to cast your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I hear there's a nationwide shortage of poll workers. Can you tell us more about that, and how can people volunteer? How old do they have to be to help at the poll?
Well, I appreciate that lead-in, because one of the things we're placing a great emphasis on right now is poll worker recruitment. And we rolled out a program called Be a Patriot, Become a Poll Worker. And, in fact, if you go to govote10.com, you'll see an image that you can click on and sign up to go work the polls. And your local county election commission will contact you and let you know how you can come and get trained. You do get paid to work the elections. And we also need people who can help us count ballots. So when I mentioned earlier that we really are having to run two elections, you know, one's the in-person experience that usually takes 17,000 poll workers. But now with needing more people to help count those ballots on Election Day, we're trying to recruit even more. And let's face it, during this pandemic, you know, we have people who get sick or may decide not to work the polls. So we've also tried to broaden the pool of people who can work polls. You know, we have, thanks to Senator Gardenhire and Representative Carter, we passed a piece of legislation during this last session that allows for 16-year-olds to be able to work the polls. And let me tell you, these 16 to 17-year-olds, they're tech-savvy, they're energetic when they come in, they're actually creating an even greater experience than what's occurred. Our older poll workers are really enjoying working with them. And so also, state and federal and local and government employees can work the polls now, as long as their direct supervisor is not on the ballot. So we've expanded the number of people who are in that pool of eligible people who can work the polls. So we rather have too many than not enough. The poll worker recruitment program has been successful, but you know, we really also need to build a bench for future elections. You know, one of the concerns I have, if you go to the polls, you'll see typically the average poll worker is probably around 65 years old. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But at the same time, we've got to build the next generation of poll workers. And I tell you what, if you work the polls, you come away with even a greater respect for what it takes to run an election.
Thank you again for joining us today, Secretary Hargett. The information has been great. And we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to share some info about the upcoming election and help us get folks out to the poll. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm honored you would ask, and I really appreciate what y'all are doing to help us get messages out about how people can become engaged. And the most fundamental way people can get engaged is don't just register to vote, get out and vote. You know, I tell people registering to vote is kind of like buying a ticket to a football game. But whenever you actually go and cast your vote, you're an active participant in the process, and people need to do that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more perspectives on the power of we after this short commercial break.
You are now listening to the Perspectives on the Power of We with your host, Ron Harris and Warren E. Logan Jr.
Welcome back to Perspectives on the Power of We. Once again, I'm Ron Harris, Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion at Blue Cross. And today, I'm joined by one of my fellow leadership team members at Blue Cross, Dekasha Winton, Senior Vice President and Chief Government Relations Officer. Thanks for being here today, Dekasha.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listen, glad to have you. We're going to talk about the importance of voting in the upcoming elections. But before we do, I was wondering if you would just tell us about yourself and about your role at Blue Cross.
Sure. absolutely. So my name, of course, is Dekasha Winton, and I serve as the Chief Government Relations Officer for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. And in its simplest form, I would say that our government relations team helps to educate lawmakers and policymakers on issues that impact Blue Cross. We work with elected officials, non-elected officials, to formulate policies that outline how Blue Cross and other insurance companies provide financing for healthcare needs for Tennesseans as well as the other members that we serve throughout the country.
Well, listen, I have to ask this. First of all, I want to know how you got started in government relations and how your team supports the company.
Okay, so very good questions and fun questions to answer. So I'll just tell you that I got started in insurance as a staff attorney at the Tennessee Department of Insurance, and that was back in 2004. Yikes, I can't believe it's been so long ago. But anyway, and from there, I would say that I got into government relations in that role with the Tennessee Department of Insurance. The Tennessee Department of Insurance regulates lots of entities, not just insurance companies. It's probably it's the second largest department within the state, and it regulates pretty much every professional with the exception of lawyers, doctors, I'm missing a couple, but every other professional that has a license is regulated through the Tennessee Department of Commerce and Insurance. So insurance, like many of the other insurance, like many of the other industries, are extremely regulated. So at the state level, as I mentioned, the Blue Cross is regulated by the Tennessee Department of Insurance and other state agencies. We're also regulated at the federal level by the Department of Health and Human Services and those other federal agencies. We're also subjected to any changes that are made by the Tennessee General Assembly and by members of Congress. So we spend a significant amount of time working with not only those federal and state elected officials and those non-elected officials that work at those departments, but we also work with local elected officials and local governments as well for the areas where we have an office space. So we spend a lot of our time getting to know people and trying to develop relationships so that we can have a seat at the table to talk through issues that are important to the company.
That's important and good stuff. Well, if all the TV ads and all the yard signs haven't tipped you off already, this year is an election year. Now, having said that, in your opinion, why is it important to vote, and why is voting a privilege?
Oh, that is a great question. I know that there have been a lot of people having conversations about making sure and encouraging you to vote and why it's a privilege and why you should vote. So I'll just say this. As an African-American woman, obviously there was a time that I did not have the right to vote. And I think most people know and understand that historical context. So I won't dwell with a lot of information there, but I will simply use this comparison in answering your question as why voting is a privilege. So, for example, you go to the store and you purchase a plant. Because I know that more people have been during the quarantine getting involved in the garden and doing things to upgrade their house and all those things. And so you know that that plant is going to need some essentials, water, sunlight, dirt, et cetera. And you also know if you don't put any effort into feeding and nourishing that plant and the plant doesn't get what it needs, that the plant will die. So the political process and the way we function as a country is essentially the same. The political process needs people to vote, to engage with their elected officials, to hold them accountable, to appreciate them for their effort. Otherwise, the plant, like our system of government that we know and our democracy that we have, experience by being a United States citizen, it no longer exists. So everyone has to play their part, and voting is the easiest way to establish your role and to be involved in the democratic process.
Wow, what a great analogy. You know, people have died so we could have that privilege.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, but of course there's the big federal and presidential elections. Those are top of the mind for a lot of people right now, but there's also some state elections going on. So why are those just as important, if not more important, than, say, the federal elections?
I wish I was in the studio with you, because for this question alone, I would like to give you the biggest hug possible, because I cannot stress how much I agree with you, particularly in your local and your state elections. Your local and state officials have a tremendous impact on your daily life. Aside from them serving as a liaison to access federal dollars, which if you live in the state of Tennessee, state of Georgia as well, we're very heavily reliant as a state upon federal dollars. So therefore, those elected officials serve as a direct liaison to federal officials in order to get that funding for the state so that we can operate. They also have a big role, a tremendous role, in creating favorable or non-favorable conditions for you and your family, your earnings potential in the state. They control so much of the education initiatives, the many, many initiatives that impact even just, you know, the utilization of lights and how many, you know, stoplights are in a particular area, and all of those things. All of those are controlled by your local and state officials. So you just really, I cannot stress the importance enough for those local and state officials. And obviously, I think I would be remiss since I did talk a little bit about the reliance on federal dollars, I'd be remiss if I did not mention, if you have not completed your census forms, please, please do so. That is due by the end of this month. Make sure that you're counted. Please make sure that you do that. It takes about 5 minutes on your cell phone. It takes you less time to scroll on Facebook. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Oh, I knew there had to be a Facebook example somewhere. Listen, I'm the only person in America not on Facebook. But the information.
I'm not on Facebook either.
But the information is still.
That's not judge.
The information is still valid. What issues do you think will be in play in the state and federal elections this year? And what should voters educate themselves on before heading to the polls? And what's the best way for voters to stay up to date on the issues and candidate stances? I know that's a lot of questions. That was a three-parter, but I think they're important.
Yes, they are incredibly important, and I'm going to try to make sure that I remember each of the three. So in response to your first question about what issues do I think will be most important, I would say the economy, number one, and then healthcare, number two. And when I'm speaking about healthcare, I don't mean in the traditional sense of what most people think about access to care. I really mean more public health issues. So obviously, with the global pandemic, that's an issue that we have to think a whole lot about, and there will be a lot of time spent as to how we adjust as a society with a global pandemic, and how do we prepare for future issues like that And then obviously the other issue, public health issue, that's receiving significant amount of attention is race relations and how social determinants of health are having a significant and tremendous impact on the healthcare industry. So I think that you're going to have a lot of issues about a lot of discussion about those two issues. And so what should you do as a voter to educate yourself about heading to the polls? I would also just simply say that you should educate yourself on issues that are important to you. The things that I'm a huge proponent of education. So candidates that are passionate about educating our future and making sure that consistent learning occurs are important for my own personal interests. And so each individual has to determine, you know, why or what issues that are important to them. And then, you know, there are multiple ways to find out how to stay up to date. But I will say this, if social media, any form, whether it's Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, whatever the case may be, if that is your sole source of information, then that's probably not going to be the most accurate, or you won't be as informed as you need to be. It's kind of like what your mother used to tell you, you know, don't put all of your eggs in one basket.
Therefore,
you shouldn't be getting all of your news in one basket. So that's how I'd answer those three questions.
Thank you, Dekashi. And I know that at Blue Cross, you've spent a lot of time this year in various ways encouraging all the employees at Blue Cross to get out and vote. And I think you've done a great job of that. And let me just hear you say it one more time before we conclude that we at Blue Cross need to encourage one another to get out and vote. Is that right?
Yes, emphatically yes. I cannot stress this enough. Each vote counts. Contrary to anyone's opinion, your vote matters. It counts. It carries an extreme amount of weight. So please go and participate in the process. And I would encourage anyone, if you're not registered to vote, please go out. And the deadline to register for the November election is October the 5th. And I would also encourage you, if you are able, please go out and early vote. It begins on October 14th in the state of Tennessee. So just please go vote. And thank you for the question. And I'll say it again, go vote, 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 vote.
And thanks again for joining me today, Dekashi. I'll see you at the polls in November, all right?
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And we'll be back after a short break.
Now back to Perspectives on the Power of We with your host, Ron Harris and Warren E. Logan, Jr.
Welcome back to Perspectives on the Power of We. I'm Warren Logan, president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Chattanooga. And we have on the phone with us today, Charlene Oliver. Charlene is co-founder and co-executive director of Equity Alliance, a grassroots advocacy group headquartered in Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you, Charlene, for making time to be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. The overall theme of this radio series is Perspectives on the Power of We. And today's focus is on voting, and it created a perfect opportunity to talk about the power of voting. But first of all, before we get into that, Charlene, if you don't mind, tell us about Equity Alliance. What is its mission, and how did you get started?
Sure. So the Equity Alliance, we are a nonpartisan 501c3 nonprofit. We are based in Nashville, but we do our work statewide. And we are focused on using our voting power as a weapon in the fight for social and economic justice. We focus and champion voting rights, but also we are here to ensure that racial equity is achieved through our government. So we work at the intersection of civic engagement, racial equity, economic opportunity. So our work is rooted in grassroots, and we go where the people are to make sure that we're registered to vote, we're using our vote, but also we're holding our elected officials accountable to the things that they promised.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. So you have Equity Alliance offices, I understand, throughout Tennessee, including Chattanooga. So on what program area does your Chattanooga office focus?
We have launched a program that we've been doing for the past 3 years called the Tennessee Black Voter Project. And it is our electoral program that we do around every election to help people get out to vote. So it's threefold. It's voter registration, voter education, fourfold, voter education, voter turnout, and also voter protection. So in Chattanooga, we have a presence. We have hired a local organizer. His name is Dennis Clark, and he is, helping us to get out the vote in Chattanooga. So I can definitely get folks in touch with him, but also we can get in touch through our website if you want to get involved. We are running different phone banks and text banks where you can call voters right from your home, from your couch, to make sure that they're ready to vote, registered, and have a way to get to the polls.
Wow, thank you for that. That's a tremendous asset. So based upon your years of experience and your perspective, what would you say are the three most important reasons to vote?
Oh, gosh. There are a lot of reasons to vote, especially in this moment in time in history where we are. But I would say, three reasons: past, present, and future. For the past, obviously, we have only been granted the right to vote for the since the 1965 Voting Rights Act. That's when we truly, everyone got the right to vote. And so we should vote for the folks who are no longer with us, our ancestors, who marched, who fought, who died, who were lynched, so that they can be truly free. And freedom is having the right to choose. That is why the Equity Alliance is focused on self-determination, having that freedom to vote for who you think best represents you. For the present, we should be voting for what's happening right now in our history, in this country. There's so much civil unrest. Black men and women are still being killed by police, unarmed Black men and women. We have a coronavirus that is affecting millions of Black residents, people of color, at alarming rates that we're dying at. We have an economy where we are the essential workers, but we can't get essential services. So there are many reasons to vote. We have elected officials that don't care about our giving us health insurance, especially in Tennessee. We have over 250,000 people who are uninsured, but our state legislature won't pass and expand the Affordable Care Act. We can't get voting rights in this state. We're in the bottom five for voting in Tennessee, in the country. So I say for the present, vote, because we're still dealing with the pandemic of poverty. Poverty is plaguing the Black community right now. And then I say vote for the future. Vote for our children. Bring your children to the polls with you. A lot of times when I talk to voters, one of their first memories of voting is their parents taking them to the polls with them. And so we got to make this a family affair. Voting is contagious. And so we have to make sure that we're taking the entire family, our cousins, our grandmama, our uncles, our nieces and nephews to the polls so that they can see it in action, see us putting democracy in action. And we do this for the future because we know that what we're voting on today will have implications for generations. We have a president who is appointing judges to the Supreme Court who will be there for life. And so whoever is in the Supreme Court now will have effects for our kids and our grandkids. The things that Congress is voting on today, that costs money. That costs tax dollars that our children will have to pay for and pay back. So we have to vote, and we have to make sure our voice gets heard. And the more of us that do it, the more of us, the things that we get that we want actually can come to fruition through systemic change.
Wow. Thank you. Those are really motivating reasons. We know, you know, for our research for this, we found out that Tennessee is one of the states with a low voter registration rate as well as a low voter turnout. Do you think if more people would vote if they understood the power of the ballot to effect change?
I think so. You know, there's a saying, when you know better, you do better.
Okay.
And I feel like in this country, we have a voting problem, yes. But we have a problem when it comes to access to information.
Okay.
Information is withheld from us because they don't want us to know that we are truly equal when it comes to our vote. Bill Gates, Donald Trump, you know, Jeff Bezos, all the billionaires, they have one vote just like me, just like everybody else. And so that's the one place we're equal. And when we show up in numbers, we can actually move the needle. And so I feel like we miss a big piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. We talk about getting people registered to vote, and then how do we make sure they go out to the polls? Well, a lot of people feel intimidated by this process because they don't know who the candidates are. They don't know the lingo. They're not paying attention to politics every day because they're working two and three jobs. And so voter education is that missing link that we skip over, that is crucial to making sure that people feel empowered, that they know actually what they're voting on. They know the issues. So we have to spend time doing political education, knowing the difference between state government, federal government, and our local government, knowing what our elected officials actually do in those offices. Knowing who represents you is important. So that political education that we didn't get in civics class, we still have to make sure that people feel informed. That's why the Equity Alliance does a Tennessee Voter Guide. In Chattanooga, if you go to ChattanoogaVoterGuide.com, you'll be able to download that free resource in October when it's ready for the November election. So we educate folks on who the candidates are, what they stand for. All the information you need to know to go vote is in that Chattanooga Voter Guide.
Okay, we're looking forward to that. Well, what would you recommend other than voter registration that an organization like the Urban League can do to encourage people to vote?
You know, I know the Chattanooga Urban League does great work. When I came and visited you guys earlier this year, before the pandemic, I saw all kinds of resources in your lobby. You are doing great efforts to help with the census. So I think you're doing what you need to be doing already. And so I just encourage you all to continue to keep up the good work, continue to partner with other organizations and like the Equity Alliance, and just be that resource for your community.
Well, yeah. Let me just say thank you for joining us today, Charlene. I wish I could talk to you for about another hour on this program, but unfortunately, I don't have that. What I do want to say is just thank you. Thank you for the work that you guys are doing in Nashville. Thank you for the work that you're doing here. We're looking forward to the partnership, and we appreciate you. To our radio audience, remember that no matter what side you are on, your vote is extremely important. And as I read recently, when you skip voting, it's not a rebellion. It is really surrender. So exercise your power, let your voice be heard, and vote. We'll be right back after a short break.
Now back to Perspectives on the Power of We with your host, Ron Harris and Warren E. Logan Jr.
Thanks for tuning in to the first episode of Perspectives on the Power of We, our new limited series brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee in partnership with the Urban League of Greater Chattanooga. Come back next week as Ron and Warren will discuss more perspectives on the power of we.